We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts.
Good morning, friends. I've got slides this week, and I've never done that before, so we'll see how it goes. I am really honored to speak with you again. And if you've never done this, I can tell you it's a little weird how quiet it gets in here. It's really quiet. I have a 5-year-old at home, so there is just rarely a moment of silence in my life at all. And I've been a teacher for my whole professional life. But even when you teach adults, it's pretty rare that they're all paying attention at the same time. So that moment sitting here when you get ready to open your mouth to speak and your voice is going to be the only sound, that moment is really intimidating. I'm guessing that's why speakers open with a joke or an anecdote. It's maybe partly to warm up the audience and develop a little rapport, but I am convinced it's also largely for the speaker just to get used to the sound of their own voice coming out. I'm a language nerd, just through and through. So getting to witness my daughters learning to speak has been fascinating for me. Babies use their voices from early on, like way before they use words. And I think part of that is them getting familiar with their own voices, how they work, how to use their mouths to make various sounds, and how to engage with other people. And as they start to speak, babies are learning not only vocabulary, but how to understand and define the world and themselves. They learn important words first: mama, dada, milk, and other words they need on a daily basis. Toddlers then learn to differentiate. That's a dog. That looks different, but you're telling me it's a dog too. A dog. No, that's a horse. All right, whatever you say. That guy is daddy. There's another guy. Daddy? No. What about that guy? Is he daddy? Okay, so just the one guy is daddy. Got it. Preschoolers then start to categorize. They want to know which of their friends are boys and which are girls. They want to know who takes a nap in the afternoon and who doesn't. They want to know who likes or dislikes the same foods that they like or dislike. They want to know which groups they're in and who's in those groups with them. They're starting to use the language to define themselves. If we're lucky, as we grow up, we are given words we need to understand and explain our emotions as well. If we aren't that lucky, the emotions still come out, but they'll be more often misunderstood. When my daughter doesn't have the vocabulary she needs to explain how she feels, she finds another way to express it, which often involves tears. But either way, she's using her voice to tell me something about herself. Words are often the vessels that carry our inner selves out into the world. But even when we don't use words, we can still use our voices. We have body language. We have resources, time, money, energy, votes. And we have creative voices that come out in anything we do to make something aesthetically pleasing or just otherwise enjoyable. And as we grow from babies to toddlers, to children, to adolescents, to adults, and throughout adulthood, as we grow, as we learn new words, new concepts, new categories, as we explore our own emotional depths and learn to understand and explain our feelings, as we become aware of our bodies, our values, our tastes, our preferences, and our styles, as we grow, our voices grow with us. And as we learn to use our voices, they are how we share who we are with the world. If you listened to my last talk, you know that I think that is absolutely necessary for the world to function as it should. You are absolutely necessary for the world to function as it should. That's hard, though. Bringing your full self to the table, laying your insides out for everybody to see, is terrifying. And we get a lot of messages throughout our lives telling us what's allowed and what's not, what's acceptable and what's not, what's safe and what's not. when we use our authentic voices and receive negative feedback. Our authentic voices get buried a little bit under that message that what we're offering is unwanted, unnecessary, or unacceptable. I can think of lots of times when my voice has been buried by shame, by societal expectations, by gender roles, by other people's carelessness, and by the false stories I've told myself about who I am and the value I have as a carrier of the indwelling divine. I'm willing to bet that I'm not the only one whose voice has been discouraged, silenced, belittled, shamed, and otherwise buried under a pile of negative messages telling us to shut up. So I'm going to share some of my stories with you. And if they strike a chord with you, then let's start digging each other's voices out of the rubble. Let's encourage each other to find, cultivate, and use our powerful, authentic voices. And let's support each other. Hold up the microphone for those who've been unfairly silenced and sing the same messages of goodness. Because when we do that, well, there's just no limit to what we can create. Story number one. When I was maybe 9 or 10 years old, the state of North Carolina required us to take a standardized writing test. In preparation for it, we did a practice test, which was scored by the principal. I don't remember what the writing prompt was for the practice test, but I remember wanting my essay to be different, to stand out. I got creative with it, and I answered the prompt by telling a story, a fictional story I made up. I did not get a very good score on that practice test. Like most of my memories from childhood, it's the feelings I recall more than the actual events. I don't remember the prompt, or really what I wrote, or the score. I just remember that it wasn't good, and I was embarrassed. I hadn't performed well, and I was ashamed. A creative approach was not what the principal wanted from me. She wanted a 5-paragraph essay, introduction, support, 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 conclusion. Standardized writing for a standardized test. I understand now how standardized tests work. I understand how scoring rubrics work, how Western rhetoric works, how bureaucracy works. But the stories I told myself for a long time were, I'm not a good writer, and my creativity is not valuable. I'm more confident in both of those now. But it's taken me 30 years and a ton of positive feedback and lots of practice using my voice to get there. I went to college as a music therapy major with voice as my instrument. I have sung in choirs all my life. I know it's nearly impossible to tear your eyes off that kid on the right with the shorts. But that's me in the middle in the dress, standing up straight and taking this all very seriously. The kid on the right actually works in the music industry now, by the way. In church, in school, in the car, even when I was little lying in bed at night, my family says I used to sing to myself. I love to sing, but I do not enjoy performing solo, and even worse, I hate to audition. I sing freely at home, and my husband swears it's just like being married to Julie Andrews. But put me in a room with 3 people and their clipboards of judgment, and I choke every time, almost literally. My throat closes up, and I just forget how to breathe. The smaller the room, the worse it is. As you can imagine, this is not a good situation for someone who wants to be a voice major. And after my first semester, the faculty told me I would need to pick a new major. And I was crushed, embarrassed. I was ashamed. I had to tell my friends and my family that I was switching majors and why. I had to change all my classes for the next semester. I understand now that the School of Music and I were just not a good match. Our styles were incompatible, but at the time, they were like the gatekeepers. I thought they were the authority on the matter. And so they must be right. And I must just be a bad singer. And that's what a story I told myself for a long time. While my husband offloads little pebbles of this message every time he tells me he feels like he lives with Idina Menzel, But you're still not going to find me in an audition room anytime soon. Oops. I grew up in a pretty conservative church. The only woman on staff was the secretary. Women were not ordained. Women didn't preach. I always felt loved and cared for there. I don't want to badmouth anybody. but I don't think I saw a female church leader until I was an adult. That just wasn't an archetype, for lack of a better word, that I had. I did, however, know that there were verses in the Bible about how women should be silent in church and not teach or have authority over men. So I went to college believing that the boys in my campus ministry somehow had more spiritual authority than I did, that their voices were more important because God. In all female Bible study groups, I felt more comfortable speaking up, but I was frustrated that the group members weren't more engaged and open-hearted. I wanted more than the pat answers to uninspiring questions we were getting, but I didn't know how to say that. I wanted to explore the magic and the wonder I felt when I engaged with God, and I wanted the other women in the group to experience that too, but I didn't have the vocabulary to voice that. And in my unvoiced frustration, I just steamrolled the group by answering every question, trying to get beyond the surface to something more. But when a leader pulled me aside and asked me to let some of the other group members have a chance to speak, I shut up. I was embarrassed. I didn't want to be a know-it-all. I didn't want to step on the toes of the leaders by taking over their group. I didn't want to be troublesome. So I stopped answering questions unless I was asked directly. I understand now that the leaders were trying to draw people out, and they were struggling to do it with the types of questions they were asking. And I understand now that I responded out of immaturity and shame by swinging too far in the other direction and going silent. But the story I told myself at the time was that my voice was not wanted. Years later, I would find myself in another group situation where our teamwork was being observed. And during our lunch break one day, my designated observer pulled me aside and said, "I'm probably not supposed to tell you this, but I'm so frustrated because I can see that you know what to do and you're not saying anything. Why are you letting this male person take the lead when you clearly have all the answers?" I don't remember if I answered her or not. I was probably dumbfounded, but I can guarantee you the reason I was doing that was because I had been conditioned to let other people, especially men, do the talking. With the exception of that woman who was observing my teamwork, the message for me for a long time was that my voice was unnecessary or unwanted. I've done a lot of work to clear this rebel out, and I am grateful to have had really good friends who've labored with me, picking up messages and asking me, "Why do you still have this?" before tossing them aside and saying, "I want to hear what you have to say." I have two sisters. My middle sister has always been into art. She took private lessons as a kid and showed natural talent early on. I took piano and voice lessons. Music was my thing and art was hers. And for most of my life, I believed that I just wasn't good at art. She was the artsy one. I was the musical one, period. I do a lot of drawing these days, as some of you know, but it took a concerted effort to break through my belief that I was hopeless as an artist. I had to learn that nobody is good at a new skill when they're first learning it. This is why human beings learn to walk when they're still so short and have diaper padding on their butts. They're going to fall down. But when the baby falls down, we don't mock or shame the baby. We cheer for the baby for every tiny, awkward little step. We make videos of the walking and the falling down, and we post them on Facebook so other people can also cheer for the baby, and they do. Why should it be any different for a grown woman who's learning to draw? Of course I was going to be bad at it, but that didn't mean I couldn't improve. I still struggle with imposter syndrome. I still feel like I'm lying when I say I'm an artist or a designer. I still look at other artists' work and think I'll never be as good as they are. But I can also feel the balance slowly shifting as I work to find my artistic voice. Because what I'm learning is that artistic voices are all about what they create, People like art, whatever style it is that they like, because it brings them joy. It creates joy in them. If art brings someone peace, it's good. If art spreads love, it's good. If art develops patience in the artist as they make it, it's good. If a work of art adds a tiny sliver of compassion, joy, kindness, gentleness, hope, beauty, empathy, courage, affection, care, or rest to anyone's life, that art is good. Art is good when it adds goodness to the world. If you're sitting here or at home thinking, but I'm not an artist, I'm not creative, I don't make anything, here are some things I'm willing to bet you've created in the last week. A meal, an outfit, even if it's yoga pants and your husband's old ratty t-shirts, which is what I wear. An email, an opinion, an argument for or against someone else's opinion. A cozy spot in the bed or on the couch, for all that binge watching Doug was talking about. An imaginary conversation or argument with someone in your head. I see a lot of nodding happening right now. Creativity doesn't have to mean sculpting or songwriting or fashion design or drawing. Some of you are creative problem solvers. Some of you are dealing with ongoing trauma, and just getting through each day takes courageous creativity. Maybe you're creative in the ways you organize your home. Maybe you're on a tight budget and have learned to be really good at finding creative ways to get what you need. Some of you are like baby whisperers and have the most amazing repertoire of activities to engage young children. Here's the thing. If we bear the image of a divine creator, one that can speak things into existence, why wouldn't we also have the ability to create and to use our voices to create good things? Our words may not have the power to make a world and call it good, but we can add goodness to our existing world. We can participate in the ongoing creation of our world by using our voices to promote justice, peace, love, beauty, empathy, compassion, affection, gentleness, patience, care, rest, and hope. And all those other things we create when we access our interior divine. Art is just one example of someone using their voice. So my lessons about art are applicable to you no matter how you use your voice. If you use your body language to bring someone peace, your voice is good. If you use your voice to vote for a candidate who is committed to justice, your voice is good. If your creative problem solving develops patience in you as you do it, your voice is good. If being open about your difficulties forges a connection with another person, your voice is so good. If your baby whispering magic gives a child the vocabulary they need to express themselves authentically, your voice is exponentially good. If anything you do adds even a tiny sliver of compassion, joy, kindness, gentleness, hope, beauty, empathy, courage, affection, care, or rest to anyone's life, including your own, your voice is good. Your voice is good when it adds goodness to the world.
Alt-tab.
Thank you. Oh.
No.
I don't know what I'm looking at. What are you thinking?
No. Alt-tab.
Oh.
Got to get to the document.
I might need technical assistance. So what are you thinking? It wasn't my fault.
It was not your mistake. It was my mistake. You keep talking. What are you thinking about? Yeah.
Lindsay. She's just clapping for me. Thank you. Yeah. You're welcome.
You've got to repeat it back.
Yeah. Yeah, quick summary. She's been writing a book and has finished a novel, which is amazing. Congratulations. And has been getting negative feedback about it. Rejections from the gatekeepers. Yeah, saying you're too old. This is not the material that people want. There's no market for this, or you know, whatever they say. But what she's found is that the people who've actually read it have discovered goodness in it, and that there's a reason that you're doing this. Yeah, that's great. And I'd also just say I've read some really terrible books that got published somehow. I imagine yours is better than those. So
yeah, it is.
Yeah. That's what I always say. If this can get published, I can probably get published. This is bad. You just have to, you know, there's a lid for every pot. You got to find the market, which it sounds like, you know, you have some people who are into it, so surely there are other people. And like I said, if it even creates goodness in you while you're doing it, it's totally worthwhile. Yeah. Jack? Yeah, so Jack was saying he's gotten positive feedback from a lot of places, but not necessarily the places he needed them from. Is that fair?
Or wanted to get them from? Yeah, I undervalued my own value.
Uh-huh. I'm just identifying so much with what you're saying about like expressing yourself and people saying this is great, but you saying, but it's not exactly what I want.
Right.
That's such an artist kind of thing. Like, but it's not what I had in my head, but it's not as good as it could be. It's not what I want to be recognized for. It's not exactly right. It's not like totally fulfilling, but the need to, learn to accept that acceptance, to accept that positive feedback, that affirmation. That goes a long way, I think.
I think what really affected me was what you were saying, you were like talking about a baby, and I like fall down. And I think that is how I saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to be seen as a baby falling down on your grown man adult diaper butt. Yeah, no, I can definitely relate to that as well.
Last one.
Okay, Angela says, it's interesting how both these stories are about institutions putting their needs and processes above hers. Oh, man, church is an institution, too. Yep. And I have a lot more to say about that, but that'll have to be my next lesson. All right.
Well, if you would, please prepare your offerings. We are all online donors now. And if you go to our website, at the top, there's a donate button. And remember what I say all the time, spiritual community is a great return on investment. What we put into it, in our time and our energy and our love and our affection, returns to us a context, a place in which our lives and in which our souls thrive. So, remember Julie's request for help. Remember the offering. Remember the people in the directory. Put in, and we get a return on investment. And that being said, if you would, please put your hand on your heart and remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. Love and joy and peace, the beauty of voice we heard about this morning. It is within us because the divine is within us. And if you would, extend your other hand to our city. Let's look as we go for opportunities to share that that's already in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We are dismissed. We had to restart again, so we're running a little bit behind. But in 50 minutes, we'll be gathering at the Art Park, at the Museum of Art Park. Come on out and let's have a picnic together. See you later. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.